Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Nick Keyser, intern Mark here with you on this Thursday morning. And as we do every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock, we go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in our man Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports. Charles, good morning. How are you?
Doing well. My skeetic nerve is acting up a little bit this morning, but I'll be all right.
Yeah. Well, I know a guy for that.
I don't know how I had not heard that until.
Oh,
today.
Really? You never heard that before?
Yeah. No, I had never heard that before. But as I'm listening to Joe say it, I'm like, is Robbie just licking his chops, listening? Like, how far in is he going to stick the knife on this thing?
Oh, he set me up very well.
There's a nice video element to it as well, where my face is just grinning, as he said.
Yes, realizing what I've done and taking full advantage of it.
Skiatika!
How are you guys doing this morning?
We're awesome, Charles. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Titans fans, not doing so great. Malik Willis waltzes in here and beats the crap out of the Titans on Sunday. Titans dropped to 0-3. So, Charles, let me ask it to you this way. You got the Titans at 0-3, and they keep turning the football over, and they've not forced any turnovers. Jacksonville gave up about 1,000 points to Buffalo the other night, also at 0-3. What do you make of the futility of both of these teams in the AFC South?
Oh, boy. The Titans, it's funny because I'm like, man, you just – the offensive line – and I'm like, all right, I got to move off Levis. Like, let me get away from just constantly harping on some of the decisions of Levis and find another root cause for how this team, you know, what's failing, how it can get better. And the line is obviously not playing. I expected more. Now, it's early. A lot of offensive lines are playing poorly across the NFL. It's the preseason now is in September for most teams. And I expect that things get better. But, you know, the right tackle situation now is, I think it's got to be really worrisome for the Titans just in terms of consistency, mistakes, performance. It's really hard to fix this now that you're in the season. You know, you try to shore it up schematically. You hope to figure out exactly what a player is doing wrong, and you coach it out of them, or, you know, is there an injury that's lingering here that we don't know about? I don't know. But it's, you know, the line to me is really concerned. And then also when I look at, like, offensively for the Titans, they got to get something out of the running back spot. Like, from a functioning standpoint, taking some heat off of Levis, you got to be able to produce with that running back rotation. That's not happening. You know, those are definitely the two things I think I'm probably most concerned about offensively for the Titans. And, you know, Jacksonville, we talked about this last week. I think, again, I don't think Doug Peterson is coaching particularly well. I think his clock management has been poor. I mentioned it last week, you know, red zone offense for them, it's once again, you know, problematic. But at the same time too, like, at some point, Trevor Lawrence has got to commandeer something here. He's got to find a gear that I feel like has eluded him his entire career as a quarterback. And I was thinking about it. I was talking to him, actually Mike Floyer from Pro Football Talk. We were talking this morning, and he brought up Lawrence, and I thought back to the preseason, and, you know, I go through Jets camp, and they're practicing against the Commanders, and, you know, I got a Jets source who brings up Jaden Daniels without me even asking, just being like, hey, this dude's a baller. He's so good, you know, all these things. And then I go to this game, and Jaden Daniels basically, he's told, we're going to protect you. We're getting the ball out of your hands. Like, we're starting our third string guard at right tackle this game. Like, don't get killed. Okay, just do what we say. Which Daniels does, except one point they send in this screen pass. He audibles out of it. He's not supposed to. He audibles out of it and throws a go ball route to Diami Brown. Huge play. Awesome play. And the Commanders, they were pissed. Like, they were upset. Like, Dan Quinn was upset. You know, the front office, like, he had to be talked to after that. It was like, hey, man, we're trying to protect you. That's great. You did it. But, you know, understand what we're trying to do here. But when you talk to his teammates, they're like, yeah, that's a dude. Like, this dude does not like to lose. This is like, you could just see how it changed kind of the enthusiasm of the offense and kind of galvanized behind him. I felt like I saw that with Brock Purdy too, when he walked into the Niners, you know, starting job, and the things you heard, you know, like talk to Trent Williams, you're like, God, how is the All-Pro Hall of Fame tackle this? Like, he is loving this dude. He's so far, you know, like in Purdy's camp. Like, what is going on here? And then you watch Purdy play, and you're like, okay, like, I get it. I see why. There's just certain quarterbacks that I think are they're rally guys, and I just don't know what the deal is with Lawrence, if he's got that in him.
Well, you mentioned Daniels. I tweeted, I'll stand by it, Charles. He's going to be an MVP. Am I just wildly overreacting to how he carved up the Bengals? And just I just feel like he's got the elements of a great player.
I mean, he can be an MVP. If he's MVP this year. I mean,
well, not this year. I'm just saying he's going to win MVP.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I mean, when you watch him, the only thing that worries me about him is size, right? Because you look at him and you're like, man, he is just not a thick guy. Like, he is a thin guy. But I see him as all these years with, like, Lamar Jackson, we're like, oh, he's this dynamic runner, he's this playmaker and all this stuff. And if they can just get him to, you know, play great football from the pocket and then in the playoffs play great football from the pocket and all these different – like, I look at Jaden Daniels, I'm like, no, this dude is a thrower. Like, he is a pocket guy, but he is a pocket guy who also has – this dynamic running playmaking element to him. He's everything we've wanted for years from quarterbacks. And it's not like, I don't want to kill RG3 here, but it's not like the RG3 season where we're like, okay, that rookie season was fun to watch, but you know, offensively, when you talk to other teams, they're like, yeah, we're going to figure him out. Like, we'll figure. And then he got hurt and that dramatically changed things. But I think even inside the organization at that time, they were questioning how high is the ceiling for this offense with RG3 in it. And I don't think that's what's happening in Washington. I think they've been very conservative, and then they've slowly opened the playbook. If you look at his passing charts from weeks 1, 2, and 3, you see, okay, they kept it real short. Okay, they opened it up a little more in week 2, especially second half of week 2. And then week 3, they're like, you know what? Let's give the kid the field. Let's let him do what he does. And the Terry McLaurin touchdown where he just gets decked, the free rushing safety off the edge, and he knows it's going to happen, and he just says, nope, I'm going to take it. I'm going to take it right in the teeth, and I'm going to put the ball up and let Terry go get it.
You know, that's pretty good.
Like, yeah, that's one of those situations where you're like, ooh, I can see why guys, you know, are so head over heels in love with him already.
What about the Cincinnati part of this? They dropped to 0-3. Obviously, there's been the Chase contract situation, T. Higgins playing on the franchise tag. Is it time to panic yet if you're a Bengals fan with the Bengals fan with the 0-3 start?
Well, they can't run the ball. I mean, they definitely seeing how Joe Mixon before he got hurt was helping the Houston offense and really what he had added to the Houston offense. There's like just an element of how he ran, a toughness that I think he kind of instilled as soon as he got into Houston. It's missing in Cincinnati. I mean, their running game is just, it's crap. Like it's really, really poor. And, you know, I think that's obviously really concerning. I think Higgins being out for as long as he has been, I expect that will improve things now that he's back in there and, you know, give him a couple of games to kind of get his feet under him. But the Chase awkwardness, there's a lot of noise. There's definitely a lot of noise around that team that I think clearly was distracting. I don't think the offensive line has played as well either. The one thing I will say about them, they're going to go to Carolina. Like, I get it. Andy Dalton, like, gangbusters in game 1 and that maybe that changes Carolina pretty significantly, but I still think they can get after Carolina's defense on the road. This is a good opportunity for them to get themselves right. They host Baltimore and then they go to the Giants after that. But I feel like, okay, here's a 3-game kind of run here with Carolina and the Giants on the schedule. Granted, those are 2 road games where they're going to have an ability to kind of get themselves, you know, back on track. If they win both of those games, granted, they'd still be 2-4, not great, but they need some positive momentum on offense. And I think those are 2 defenses where they can definitely get it, but it's a tough start. I think Joe Burrow needs to go back to his old haircut.
Yes, I would agree with that. He may be onto something there.
He looks like, called him Ellen DeGeneres the other day. Yeah. I lost it.
He looks like early 2000s Justin Timberlake out there.
Oh, yeah, he's got to get rid of that.
Okay, on the other end of the spectrum, I mean, I think, you know, Bills, Chiefs, we know they're legit. Steelers and Vikings. You buy One more than the other? Neither? Both?
How can he? I mean, what the Vikings are doing, man? Like, I'm sorry, but like, they shut down a San Francisco offense, and that was, you know, they were healthier when they shut down that offense, and the 49ers were healthier than they are right now. And then, I mean, what they just did to Houston, I'm like, oh my God. Brian Flores, the defensive coordinator there, despite suing the NFL, despite, you know, shredding his last owner and basically saying, like, hey, this guy tampered and all the things they did, you're like, he'll never get another head coaching job. Now I'm like, ugh, I don't know, man. Like, he is. No one likes that week. And I think I brought it up in the past where I've talked to Sean Payton about where he said, like, it's like literally the worst week of your year when you have to deal with like game planning for this guy's defense. It just sucks. Like you're looking at, you know, post snap rotations where you're like, I don't even know what I'm looking at right now. Like it takes time to study exactly what they're doing post snap and different looks that they're throwing at teams. It literally takes guys who you really respect, offensive minds in the game, they have to spend a lot of time trying to decode exactly what they're seeing. And then they go out there and play it. And Flores changes it on the field. The quarterback doesn't know what he's seeing. The OC doesn't know what he's seeing. The head coach is like, I don't like, this is calling up to the box going like, guys, what do we, you know, we got to figure this out by halftime. They're so legitimate defensively. And then, you know, Darnold, we're all waiting for the wheels to fall off. I get it. And it's been the history with Sam Darnold that just, it gets to us. But when he went to San Francisco, he got better and like tangibly better to the point where I knew pretty quickly they're getting rid of Trey Lance. Like Darnold's going to be their guy. He's absorbed this offense pretty quickly, the Shanahan offense. And then he goes to Minnesota where he's running the same Shanahan offense. And the confidence, and it's a complicated offense. It takes usually quarterbacks about 2 years to really get their feet under them with it. So he's, even now, you think he's kind of just starting to hit his stride. But I looked, there was, I talked about in my QB column on Tuesday, there's this throw he makes, this touchdown to Naylor in the end zone. And in the span of 2 seconds, when you watch him, you can see Naylor was his third read. And that is not Darnold. Career-wise, like, he's been like, a one read guy in panic. Like he's never, it's like, why can't he get to a second read without making a bad mistake? All these different things. He's doing it now in Minnesota. And I'm like, this might be real. This actually might be what good Sam Darnold looks like in the NFL. And I'm really intrigued to see how this all plays out and like where he goes at the end of the season. Like, does it put Minnesota in a situation? Does he play well enough through the course of the season to put Minnesota into a spot where, you know, there's some hand wringing about, like, do we just keep what we have and try to work this out with him? Maybe we deal J.J. McCarthy. Like, what do we do here now? And remember, Addison just got on the field for them. T.J. Hockenson isn't even in that offense right now. Like, he could get better. As you can see, I'm buying Minnesota big time.
My goodness, I guess.
Yeah.
Jordan Love might have something to say about that this week, huh, Robbie?
We'll see how that goes. See how it goes.
Dude, the NFC North,
we'll
man. Like, if you're the Bears, you're sitting there going, okay. Like, ooh, Matt. How is Matt LaFleur doing this week? Right? You're like, dude, like, is this guy who's like a genius? Like, what exactly is? And then, you know, you're looking at Detroit.
You're looking at Shane Waldron and comparing LaFleur to him, too.
No, but that's what I'm saying. They're saying, okay, we're looking at Detroit. They made something out of Jared Goff, right? Like, they got him upright. Like, now they're not perfect right now and everything, but you kind of see what an offensive coach, what they've been able to do with Ben Johnson and all that stuff. And then you know, you look at Green Bay, and now you look at Kevin O'Connell in Minnesota, and you're like, oh, my God, like, what is going on? And then they're sitting there going, all right, we got this staff. We can't even figure out how to run a balanced offense at this point. We can't run the football. Like, that's another situation where it's been nothing but noise around Caleb Williams. I don't know how.
And now Jaden Daniels and Justin Fields are both better than him. Great.
Yes.
Yay, Chicago.
the Willis thing, though, to me, I'm just like, oh, my God. Like, you got to be, like, pulling your hair out if you're sitting here.
It's been a fun week.
Good Lord. I can't even – I'm like, this cannot be real. And then, you know, watching him against the Titans, I'm like, oh my God. And it's not like it's completely, it's like, okay, we've got six plays for you. We're going to run these six plays and that's it. Like, you know, he's throwing downfield. He's challenging corners at times. He's like the way he's running, his confidence. I'm like, God, what is going on?
Coach of the year.
It's wild, man. Yeah. Matt LaFleur. That's like Titans. Yeah, that's the Titans are sitting there going, I remember when LaFleur got hired for that job and like talking to people inside the Titans at that time and then being like, really? Okay. like, all right. I guess.
So Robbie said too. Coach. It is what I said.
Yeah. I was definitely people in that building that were like, oh, okay. That's a little wild. Like, he's going to be head coach. And he's been amazing since he's gotten there.
What about Anthony Richardson? So Richardson throws the pick the other day. You know, we've talked about the Lawrence and Levis part of this. Both those guys not going very well to this point. Richardson, you know, you're talking about, what, his seventh start. So there's still a lot of time here for us to figure out exactly what he is. But the interception the other day was pretty rough. I will say that.
Yeah, I assume you're talking the fourth and goal.
The fourth and goal. Yeah.
Yeah, I lost my mind when he threw that. And when I went back later, I hadn't seen the tip that occurred with the defender in his face. And then when I went back and looked, I'm like, oh, okay, the ball did get deflected. And I saw what he was trying to do. He was trying to sidearm it into the back corner of the end zone. It was not smart. Like, you're like, that's a bad play. Like, that's a low percentage, you know, throw, and there's a high percentage of risk that you're taking here. So even if it doesn't get tipped, I'm like, I don't know. This is, you know, it's not the kind of play that you would hope you would process in that moment. But I also think when I looked at it, I'm like, I wonder if he would have ran in the past. Like, I wonder if, you know, because that's one part of his game that they've, when you watch them, they've kind of hammered it out of them. Like, don't do what you were doing as a rookie. You know, you can't be taking off running, can't be taking these risks. And he really has not. And now I'm wondering, okay, did you take a tool, you know, did you take a club out of his bag and it completely changed the way that, you know, he feels when he's playing, you know, football. And there's the other pick that he threw was just god awful too. Like, I'm trying to remember exactly. I think he was rolling to his right, his move is right. He throws it across the field. Like, it was just another terrible, absolutely terrible pick. And it's, I don't know if you go back and look at Josh Allen's rookie year. And again, this is Richardson's rookie year. Until he plays game 18, I'm going to consider this still his rookie year. If you go back and look at Josh Allen's rookie season, he had some dog games, like some really bad games that we've forgotten about. And I mean, every bit as bad as what Richardson is doing.
No, he was bad.
What Allen? What's that?
He was bad.
Yeah, no, he was. I mean, he really was. And we've gotten away from that because he took the stride in year two, and then he took the really big stride in year three. And so, you know, I don't want to completely kill Richardson because I'm like, all right, well, let's see what it looks like from 1 year to the next. You know, year two, year three, and I see how Jalen Hurts has functioned now without Shane Steichen there. You know, Hurts leads the NFL and turnovers since Steichen left the Eagles operation. And so, I still have some faith that they can figure this out. But I do think maybe the running aspect, they have to kind of loosen their grip a little bit and be like, okay, look, we're going to live with some moderate risk and we're going to let you access your legs a little bit more and operate out of structure, running it a little more than just throwing it. And all the jokes that people make about, like, it's either the greatest throw you've seen or the worst throw you've ever seen feels true when you watch him play.
Yeah. I mean, as feast or famine a player is, at least there's some feasting.
It is.
But yeah, it's pretty remarkable. Okay. So here's a random question for you, Charles, that we were talking about earlier.
Questions.
Yeah. Well, that's basically mostly what I asked. But so Monday, you got another, you know, doubleheader, and this week, Monday Night Football doubleheader. And then we were, you know, Ryan was going through it. It's like week 7 they've got one, and week 15.
Week 15.
What do you have a rhyme or reason on the rando doubleheaders and what the reasoning is?
I frankly don't. I don't know why they choose the weeks that they choose. In my mind, the sense that I have is, it's, you know, I'm sure it's probably tied to whatever the television deal is. And so, like, the way the league operates, their television deals are pretty complicated. And I learned more about it when we went through the COVID year and they erased a couple of games. Like it was the Steelers game. They started moving games and taking games off the table. And it was like, okay, they have to make this game up. If they cancel a game, I remember it was like, they were talking about canceling. I believe it was a Steelers game. And I was talking to somebody in the league office and he was like, okay, well, we can reschedule it. This is where we can reschedule it down the line. But the problem we have is, the network needs, you know, here's what the network already has scheduled, like in that spot down the line. Here's all the advertising credits we would have to give to the advertisers who bought time, or the network would have to give advertising credits to everybody who already bought time for this game in this specific slot. And I'm like, wow, there's so much more that goes into, you know, how they hammer out exactly when they want certain games played. And I assume that's some of what is going on with those doubleheaders. I don't know why there's not, like, as you said, a rhyme or reason why they seemingly pick certain weeks to run doubleheaders when they do. But I guarantee you there is. I just don't. There's only so much stuff I can
find out for us, Charles.
I'm too busy being like, why did Anthony Richardson lose his mind on this play? Like, why did he, you know, like I can't, I'll tell you what, you've asked me, I will effort that. And I appreciate Joe giving me a heads up maybe last week to go and find this information and bring it. Thank you for bringing it up during the show.
Yeah. Things sort of pop into my brain. Sciatica among them.
Look, Robbie hurts you. You hurt me. It's just a big circle.
Exactly. It is a nice big circle that we've got here. So we've got one rookie head coach here that is 0-3 in Brian Callahan. Meanwhile, in Seattle, they're 3-0. Now, I've gone through the wins. They beat Denver, New England, and Miami without Tua. So still something left to prove for Seattle in terms of quality of competition. But are you a believer in the 3-0 Seattle Seahawks?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at, I think, a couple of things. I'm surprised their passing offense has been much better than I expected. I mean, I think they got to be like top five, I would say, right now in the NFL in passing yardage. You know, they're definitely able to move the ball, throwing it a little bit more aggressively with Geno this season than I think I expected. Then again, I mean, I think when you also look at the contributions there, you know, DK Metcalf is playing, pretty much at an all-pro level right now. You know, Jackson Smith and Jigba's turned it out, like what they thought we were going to get out of him. He's filled that role really nicely. You know, Lockett has been solid. And they've been healthy. Like, now, Kenneth Walker has not been healthy, but, you know, Zach Charbonnet has stepped in really well for them at the running back spot. And I feel like the offensive line is playing probably a little bit ahead of itself or where they thought it would be at this point. Geno's been fairly efficient. Now, he's had some turnovers. You know, I think he's thrown three picks this year, but they're not playing scared, that's for sure. And then defensively, it's sort of this is what I expected with Mike McDonald. Like, when he went there, and you talk to other people in the NFC West, you know, they're like, great. Like, this is not the guy we wanted to deal with from a defensive standpoint, you know, twice a year. And, you know, that's coming from the Rams. You know, it's coming from the Niners. Like, both the Rams and the Niners are like, oh, we didn't want this guy in our division. But again, it's early. The quality of competition, I think, is a fair question. But when you look at the rest of the division, I mean, San Francisco's really beat up right now. The Christian McCaffrey thing, we'll see if he plays this year. I mean,
well,
I don't know.
That doesn't sound good when you're going to Germany, right?
No, and, like, I'm not saying this is why he goes overseas, but, like, every once in a while you would see guys go overseas for, like, stem cell, like, treatments or things like that, things that were a little more, you know, regulated here in the U.S., right. Mostly, particularly when it comes to like the stem cell stuff, that's more like bone related like issues. But as soon as someone leaves like that, I'm like, okay, typically it's you're going to seek some kind of medical care that's maybe a little more highly regulated in the US or it's a little more, I don't want to say experimental, but it's just, it's a huge deal for him, especially in season, to me making a trip like that. And I instantly, when I heard that, I'm like, he might not play this year. That's just a weird, it's very aggressive to be happening right in the middle of the season. And I think when Kyle was asked about it, I remember hearing his like sort of answer when someone asked him about, you know, is there a chance that McCaffrey won't play this year? And just the way he answered, like, it didn't feel like the confident, you know, a coach has an opportunity to be like, of course, yes, he's playing. You know, like, this is not a season ending thing. You know, you come out and you can definitively say that. And I didn't feel like Kyle was really that convincing. And so that might not get, you know, better for them in terms of McCaffrey coming back into the fold. But even the Rams are really beat up, right? Arizona's, you know, they've still got some growth that's left ahead of them. And also now you're looking at Seattle and you're saying, man, everybody else is kind of banged up already in the division. They're already kind of having some problems. And Seattle's gotten off to this start. They got to feel great, you know, being at 3-0 and not facing the health concerns that pretty much every other team in the division is.
Charles Robinson, our guest, joins us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock here on the program. Charles, you're welcome for the homework assignment that Rex Road has given you. Thank you very much for being with us on the program today.
I really love digging into TV questions.
Nice change of pace for you. Come on, man. It'd be great.
Let me pull up all those TV sources I have, all these network sources. This will go.
You're connected. You know everyone. Come on.
Hey, let me ask you, is Tennessee winning the national championship? Is that going
to
happen?
I'm starting to get my hopes up. I think they've got a chance. They're a team that has a chance. Yeah. You wagering or something?
No. I'm just kind of curious. You know, I've sort of seen the start and everything. And I you know, when I'm kind of shaping, I'm not really working on the draft or anything, but everybody keeps bringing up that defensive end. Like, they're just in love with that
Pierce.
Kid.
Pierce? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They just, man, he's got a lot of fans in the NFL. So I'm just kind of curious to see where, obviously we're closing this out here, but a guy I'm really excited to see. I want to see Hendon Hooker play football in the NFL.
I agree. I'm with you.
They're very.
A lot of people in Nashville agree with you right now, by the way.
Man, I'm telling you, they're the Lions organization. I'm like, he is good. Like, they're very enthused at how he's looked and come along and kind of how he carries himself. And like, I'd really love to see him step on a field at some point this season and just see what he's got.
I've been saying forever, he's going to be a good starter in the NFL when he gets his chance. And at some point, yeah, Jared Goff runs a 6.8 40. So at some point, he'll probably catch up with him.
Look, with the contract there, like, it's got to happen somewhere else. But that's the thing. Yeah. Like, you see Willis and operate under LaFleur, and you're kind of like, you feel bad because you're like, man, like, what if you just want to put every player, when they come into the league, you want to put them in a situation with a great coach who can, you know, guide them and take care of them. Darnold did not have that. And then you see him kind of land in the hands of competent people in back-to-back years, and you see the strides, and you're like, this, it just stinks to feel like you lost a portion of some guys' careers because they just went through bad situations. And I think about Bryce a lot, honestly, when Bryce Young. Like, I'm like, is he going to surface later? And we're going to be like, oh, no, it really was just a situation there that was terrible, just like it was for Baker when he went through Carolina, just like it was for Darnold when he went through Carolina.
Charles, thank you, sir. We'll talk to you next week.
Absolutely, gents.
Charles Robinson joins us every Thursday morning at 8 o'clock here on the program. A lot to react to there from Charles. We'll do that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. Appreciate Charles Robinson for being with us in the last segment. Who knew Charles such a big Vols guy?
Yeah, apparently, huh?
I don't know. Vols going to win it all? You know who I'd really like to see play quarterback? Hendon Hooker. Thank you, Charles.
I agree with him. And by the way, you know, I will revert back to a take from the 2022 season, which is that Hendon Hooker will be a better NFL QB than Will Levis. So we'll see if it ends up. I mean, we'll see if Hendon Hooker even gets a chance to start in the NFL. But I would like to see at some point him get an opportunity.
Okay, so you're not trading for Bryce Young. Would you trade for Hendon Hooker right now? Nick with a very quick no from the other room.
Wow. Even when you're Vol zip up, you're a hater, huh? I'd think about it.
I would think about it, too. What would the package be? You wouldn't have to trade Levis straight up for him.
First of all, it's really interesting, in all seriousness, with the Lions in that situation, because like Charles said, you know, I mean, you just paid for Jared Goff, and, you know, it's like last week, forced to watch the Lions. You know, Goff makes good plays, and he's a good quarterback. But I swear when there's a hint of this take, I wish I could prove it. Give me like six games. Give me six games so I can change reality and make Jared Goff the Titans quarterback. We would all say he's the worst quarterback in the NFL. Like, if that guy has any pass rush at all, he's like, he's a diseased goat crumbling in the pocket. All due respect to Jared Goff. I'm not.
Remember, I'm saying with all due respect.
I mean, he is the absolute classic example of if you give good. He's accurate. He has a good arm. He sees the field. All those things. So those are all important, and he deserves that respect. But like, as far as if there's any duress at all, he's toast. So the Lions are committed to him. I think, you know, obviously you like the idea of having a capable backup because he is a sitting duck and he can get hurt. And I'm talking about Goff, all due respect. But then again, man, it's tough for Hendon if because it's a great offensive line. And it's actually one of the rare ones in the NFL you could say that about. And it might be years here with him just sort of relegated to being a backup where I think now that he's healthy, I thought in the preseason you saw some really good things from him. You know, some you still got to learn the slide stuff and things like that. But I've always thought since he was here, like, this is not a mirage. This guy can play. And, you know, another thing about that, Robbie, is, of course, we talk so much about the Browns offense. You know, there is absolutely more runway needed, I believe, for those quarterbacks. Like, Nico, when he comes out, I think it'll be the same thing. It's just, the way that offense breaks the field down for a quarterback is so unlike anything you see in the NFL. Like, you don't get to just do a half-field read and, like, okay, just whatever leverage the guy's playing, I'm going to throw deep or short. It's just not the NFL.
Yeah.
Like Bryce Petty, I covered Bryce Petty in the Cotton Bowl 10 years ago. And I'm like, is that the best quarterback I've ever seen? He just is carving up an Arduzzi defense like it's not even there. And that guy, I mean, I guess he got a cup of coffee. Would Bryce Petty, I mean, yeah, I don't know. But if Bryce Petty got a few years to, like, get used to the NFL, could he have been a good NFL quarterback? I'm just saying, the offense, I do think, extends the time period. So maybe this will end up being good for Hendon Hooker. And when he does finally get out there, he's ready for pretty significant changes in how you have to go about your business.
So what would you
What are you laughing about over there?
What would you give up? Oh, I'll show you what I'm laughing at here in a second.
Okay. Would I get if I was the Titans for Hendon Hooker?
Yeah.
I mean, if you're really talking about a serious trade, first of all, like, do the Lions want to take, I guess, another young QB to be their backup?
Probably not.
I mean, you know, I don't know. I guess you.
Like, there's no reason for the Lions to make this trade at the moment.
No, there's not.
Maybe in the off season,
that's the thing. I don't remember who the third QB in the organization is. There was it Sudfeld, I think.
I think you're correct.
You know, which is not. There's another guy who, by the way, played in some version of this Temple offense at Indiana. So. You know, I mean, if I'm the Lions, I'm asking for a pretty significant pick for a talented young backup who, you know, again, they may need him. So if I'm the Lions, I'm looking like, give me a third. Give me a fourth. Something like that.
Yeah, I don't think you can do that if you're the Titans.
Yeah.
So.
Probably not. Unless, again,
you're. Hey, Levis throws a couple more picks. Vol Twitter will be outside Nissan Stadium.
Oh, sure.
Make the trade.
Look, I don't know. I mean, obviously, Brian Callahan. Every draft those guys go through, I'm sure there's at some level of evaluation, even though they have Joe Burrow, right? So I don't know that 2 years ago he wasn't like, oh, my God, Hendon Hooker, this guy's, you know? Could he be completely enamored with a particular quarterback? And then I don't know that it's not true.
I mean, you could throw the same thing into Bryce Young. Like, does Brian Callahan love Bryce Young and thinks that the situation in Carolina has just totally ruined him?
Like Charles said, let's go through, you know. Again, like Stilley's great Joe Brady take. Yeah. It really stinks. He's like the best OC in the NFL now. Huh, crazy how that works. But, yeah, Sam Darnold, boy, he looked awful in Carolina. Baker Mayfield, boy, he looked awful in Carolina. Funny how there's a constant variable, or is it just a constant that's part of this equation?
Well, we learned the other day, constant variables are a thing. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. 615-737-1025. We'll have more reaction to Charles Robinson
coming up next. Tune in to the Chase and Big Joe Show from 9 to 11 a.m. for your chance to win all-inclusive tickets and the Eurostone Club to WWE Friday Night SmackDown at Bridgestone Arena coming up on Friday, October the 4th. Contest presented by Green Trees, a family-owned cannabis company and dispensary providing high-quality legal THC products. Check them out online at greentreescompany.com. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025, 1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Final segment of the day. Got some tickets to give away to see the Preds take on the Tampa Bay Lightning at Bridgestone Arena in their preseason home opener coming up on Saturday. Be caller 5-615-737-1025. Let's go to our 1025 The Game phone line. Welcome in CJ in Hendersonville. CJ, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, good morning. Good to be on. Good to be listening.
Thank you.
Talking a little Titans, of course. And I'm just wondering, what do y'all think is like the most optimistic approach from where we're at right now? I mean, you look at, I think when it comes to winning franchise, I'll use the Minnesota Vikings right now as a blueprint. They basically went to their defensive coordinator in their off season, Mr. Brian Flores, and said, here's a wish list. Go find yourself four or five free agents that you can put on defense and make plays. And right now, I'm going to tell you something. If you watch that team, that may be a Super Bowl team in the NFC. I mean, they're scary good, dominating the Texans, dominating the San Francisco 49ers, dominating their home opener. And what is the most optimistic approach that we can have as Titans fans, I guess, is my question. Yep. Your thoughts?
Yep. Thanks, CJ. Appreciate the call. A lot of rat poison for the Vikings this week, by the way. I'm loving it.
Yeah, that's perfect for you because – they're good, and I think it's a good point. It's funny that he said that, though, because I would also say Denard Wilson, I'm sure, had some input on getting some guys like Darius Sneed.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Don't be a woozy. Yep. You know, you go get Ernest Jones and Kenneth Murray, and, of course, you draft Tavondre Sweat. Those are some talented players you've added to the defense, which, again, still more often than not in three games has, to me, played well, just not – putting it all together, but like there are signs that the defense could be pretty good. The most optimistic approach, the Titans at 0-3, could they win the next two games? Absolutely.
Sure.
And then all of a sudden, then you know, you move forward from there. You cut out a pretty big chunk of the negativity that is just naturally going to come with an 0-3 start, and you can be in some level of a playoff race later in the season. It's not impossible. The problem is you got Buffalo and Detroit back to back on the road. You got to be real optimistic to find a win in either of those games.
Well, beyond the obvious of the win and loss, like the optimistic approach would be that you're three games into a new tenure with Brian Callahan, and there's a lot that they still haven't figured out yet, including the offensive line, and that the best way to kind of marry the two of Levis's style of play and Brian Callahan's play calling. Like the optimistic approach would be that the more games you play together, the better all that's going to get. And you start to look like a competent offense as you move forward here. Now, do I believe that that's going to magically, drastically improve? I don't. I'll have to believe it to see or see it to believe it at this point. But that's the optimistic approach is it's three games into a tenure. There's a lot of new, and it just has not taken place yet. And yeah, you're hoping that for some growth as the season goes on.
We don't know right now. I don't know that Rand Carthon isn't going to be a great GM. I don't know that Brian Callahan isn't going to be a great coach. I understand where things are now, but this is just the rush to judgment thing. And I understand it's been longer for Carthon, and his first draft is looking rough right now. I get that. But, like, it's still very early in those tenures. So the optimism is you hope that Amy Adams Strunk made good hires.
Yeah.
She has before. You hope she did here. And then – here's an easy optimism, and maybe the personnel won't let it happen, but the Cleveland Browns were atrocious up front early last season. Then they had injuries, and eventually that line got better and better, and they were fine even with the backups. I mean, Conklin was one of the guys who got hurt early. And that's a place where you could probably place a little bit of optimism based on decades of what he's done as an offensive line coach. But I love – again, I don't know what these guys – they also could be terrible. Rand could be a terrible GM. Brian Callahan could be a terrible head coach. The idea that, like, Bill Callahan is a fraud, Like, there's a great example of an overreaction to three games.
Yes.
I mean, I think decades of evidence might matter.
I would assume.
And even last year is a great example of it, but, you know, call me crazy.
Again, like you said, I think the jury's still out both on Carthon and Callahan. We talked earlier in the show about, like, when do you start having, like, some takeaways from Callahan in terms of, like, things that you learn about him? You know, is there enough of a body of work yet for me to get a great idea of how good or not good of a play caller he is right now? No, there's not at the moment. Is there enough of a body of work for me to get a good idea of whether or not he's equipped to be an NFL head coach and a good NFL head coach? No. Like, there's still a lot left to find out on that front. But, like, part of that is like, what they're going through now, right? You're 0-3. The vibes are beyond negative at this point. You got a fan base that's incredibly frustrated. You got a quarterback that's in the crosshairs with a lot of the fan base right now. Like, how do you handle all that? That's part of it, right? How do you handle all that if you're Brian Callahan? And can you get your team to work through it and get to a place where they're more prepared when Sunday or Monday rolls around to go out and win? Like, that's part of the evaluation of the head coach is, can you steer the ship when things aren't going well to begin to kick things off here?
Yeah. Can you not mute when you need to talk? Just little things, the details, the fundamentals. Details.
Yeah.
No, it's a heck of an early test for Brian Callahan. And it is why I saw, and I didn't totally catch all the connections, but Pat McAfee was like, yeah, the Zach Taylor. You know, obviously Callahan 0-3. Zach Taylor's 0-3. And he said Jacksonville too. Do you know the connection there?
I don't. I'd have to look a little bit further into it.
I mean, it's the most
I've not memorized the Jacksonville coaching staff.
But just here, you know, Cincinnati and the Titans.
It's not like, great. Man. Not a great start.
And that is a Bengals thing, too.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess some people look at it like it's a Burrow thing, but the Bengals just have these slow starts and then they recover. So maybe that'll happen here.
So what
maybe
you're saying
Brian Callahan follows the blueprint.
He's like
Zach
the
Taylor.
Anti-Wizenhut. Like Wizenhut, you give Wizenhut 6 months to prepare for game one. That guy's unbelievable.
He's got a 1-0. Perfect quarterback rating for his rookie quarterback.
That guy was – they won both the week one games. And what'd they win? Like one more game in addition to that in total? Through his entire tenure?
I mean, and seriously. Yeah. Well, yeah, that's right, because Malarkey won at least one or two, right?
Yeah.
After his interim. So, yeah.
I think they may have won like one other game total with Ken Wizenhut. So, at least you got that going for you. If you're the anti-Wizenhut and it gets better as the season goes along, I would take that over being like a – week one juggernaut.
And by the way, Wizenhut was supposed to be the QB whisperer,
yeah,
offensive guy too. Sometimes they don't work out.
Sometimes they don't.
Let's see what
Did
happens.
Did I see the other day he got a job in like the UFL or something?
Is that right?
I think I saw that.
So is Jeff Fisher's his boss?
I don't know.
Is he the commish still?
No, he was the AFL, wasn't he?
Oh God, really?
I think so. I don't know. We'll have to ask him.
I'm so confused now. There's so many FLs.
That does it for us
Including
today on
VFLs.
The program. Jason Big Joe is coming up next. You're listening to 102.5, 106.3, The Game.